Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the ADS CFT course. It's so nice to be back, and it's so nice to teach you the first course in the first cycle, and then to teach you in the last cycle. This is really amazing. Okay, so this course is going to be about the ADS CFT correspondence, but this is a huge subject, and so it covers so many topics that it's completely impossible to teach it in one course, especially the Psi course, which is very short. So I'm going to rather focus on things which I like and which are more from the gravity side. And so our main point here will be to discuss some applications of the ADS-CFT correspondence to calculate something interesting. But we will be mostly, you know, taking this gravity side. And so according to the plan which we have here, we are going to start with reviewing the black hole thermodynamics, which, you know, was one of the motivations for formulating this duality. And you will see that there's some, and we will use this black hole thermodynamics later anyway. So it's very useful to review it at the beginning. And then in the second week, I will spend very briefly on some stringy motivations. So if you have taken the string theory course, you will know everything much more than I do. But if you haven't, then this will just provide the necessary background, which we will need a little bit later. And then week three, it will be the main dictionary. It will be how, you know, we use these things to calculate some interesting quantities. And then the final 2 weeks will be basically applications. It will be applications to quark-gluon plasma. It will be applications to holographic superconductors. It will be applications to black hole information paradox and stuff like that. All right, so that's basically the plan. There's additional reading. So there will be a study text which is under development. I really like this book, ADS-CFT Duality User Guide. It's very simply written. It's very thin. But basically, I will follow some parts of this book for this lecture. It's like amazingly written and at the right level. But there is, of course, more thorough book, which is this Gauge Gravity Duality, Foundations and Applications. That has more stuff in it. But it's also a little bit more advanced in writing and so on. And there is a nice review on the entropy of Hawking radiation by Maldacena and his collaborators, which I also give you over there. So now there will be 6 tutorials and 3 homeworks. We shall see how long these homeworks will be, but hopefully not so long. So you'll spend like 3 weeks doing them, something like that. All right, so let me start with part A or chapter A or whatever. It will be lessons from black hole thermodynamics. So by the way, as always, please feel free to interrupt me anytime and ask questions, and I'll try to answer them, but maybe I'll refer to Bruno, who knows everything, okay? Very good. So we know that there are black holes in our universe, and these are very interesting astrophysical objects. They are typically surrounded by accreting plasma and stuff like that. And because of this plasma accretion, you see them not as completely dark, but as completely luminous objects in our universe. It's a paradox of black holes. But black holes are also very interesting from a theoretical point of view. And as we shall see, there is some puzzles associated with these black holes, such as black hole information paradox and so on. So I'll try to review these theoretical aspects of black holes now. So now, let's say, characteristics of black hole. And so for our purposes, we will start with the simplest possible black hole, which you've seen in your relativity course, and that's the Schwarzschild black hole. So we take Schwarzschild for simplicity. And you know that a black hole is simply described by the geometry, which depends on some metric function f, so dr squared over f, and then there is this part with this angular with angles d omega square. So the d omega square is just sine squared theta d phi square plus d theta square. And this metric function f is given by 1 minus 2m over r. Okay, so that's our simplest black hole, which we will now study and look at some of its properties. And so you know from your relativity course is that this black hole is characterized by a horizon, and that this horizon happens precisely when the coordinate system of this metric breaks down, so when r equals to 2m. So this is located at r equal to r plus equals to 2m. And we know that when that happens, this metric is not well defined, and you have to, but it's just a coordinate singularity, and you, you can actually go to different coordinate system and extend your space-time through the horizon, and nothing really bad happens on the horizon, at least according to general relativity. So we have the horizon, and we can really think about the black hole as a ball of that radius r plus. Yes?
Yeah, this is, okay, I've got a question about r plus. I've seen that around, especially in papers with black hole metric stuff. Is there an r minus?
That could be a r minus, very good. So if you, as we shall see later, you can have also charged black holes. Mm-hmm. So if you had a charge, then you would be adding here an extra term, plus q square over r square. So suddenly, how you are finding this r plus? You are setting f of r plus equals to 0. That's how you're finding this, right? So this is from f of r plus equals to 0. However, if you added this term here, and suddenly this equation f of r equal to 0, because this is now a quadratic equation in R, will have two solutions. It will have R plus, and it will have R minus. So then you will have inner horizon, which was the smaller one, and you have the outer horizon, which is the black hole horizon, R plus. Okay, so yes, you can have other horizons, and it's quite complicated, and let me not go into that, okay, at this point. So we have a horizon. Then we have an asymptotic mass, which surprisingly is just this m, okay? M, but you can write it in terms of the horizon. Well, I can invert this, even I can invert this equation. It's just r plus over 2, okay? So that's the asymptotic mass. It corresponds to the energy stored in the spacetime. So you can calculate it. So you know that asymptotically the spacetime is stationary. There will be a killing vector dt. So, of course, something which corresponds to time translation symmetry by Noether's theorem, you will have the corresponding conserved charge, which will be the energy. And this is precisely this mass m here. So you can actually calculate it. So corresponds to time translation symmetry. Translation symmetry at infinity. And you know, in general relativity, you will have the corresponding Killing vector field, which is d over dt. Okay, so that is this time existence of this Killing vector field at at infinity, which gives rise to the conserved energy, conserved mass. And there's a formula if you want how to really convince yourself that this is true. I will write down the formula, but. It only works in asymptotically flat spacetime, so it's not very, universal formula, but if you want. So you just calculate, it's something like a Gauss's law. So if you want to calculate how much charge is there, you surround it by a sphere, and you calculate, the electric flux going through that sphere. And so this is a very similar formula. So you think about this as a vector potential. If you do dk, you have the field strength, and so this is in the language of differential forms, but basically you take the derivative of this k, and you multiply by the Levi-Civita tensor, that's this hot star here, and this is precisely the flux of this corresponding electric field okay, and that gives you m, okay?
What does it mean to take the derivative of the vector?
Say it again.
What does it mean to take the exterior?
Oh, very good. So you need to lower this. You need to create a form out of k, right? So this is really k b using the music notation or whatever. So you lower the index, this is the metric, and then you take the exterior derivative. You form the field strength, right? So it's like f mu nu, right? And then you take to do all of this, and that gives you the corresponding electric charge. So this is the same thing you would do in electromagnetism. You would do this. This is F. You take star of F, and that's okay. So it's like electric type. Gauss's law, basically. Oh, very good. So we have horizon. We have asymptotic mass. We can then look at the horizon. And the horizon, well, maybe I should be writing here. This is so amazing, these blackboards. So I was just teaching a course in Charles University, and they have this very small blackboard, which is like this, right? And you have to fit everything on that blackboard. This is so nice. So then there is a quantity which is called surface gravity. And basically tells you what is the gravitational acceleration on the horizon, okay? So something like the gravitational acceleration on horizon. Okay. It's again a definition of this. So what you can show is that this scaling vector k, which is the partial t, becomes very special on the black hole horizon. It becomes null on the horizon. So the norm suddenly on the horizon of the k is k squared is equal to 0. So everywhere else, if you are outside of the horizon, k is time-like. It really shows the direction of time. But if you are exactly on the horizon, it becomes null. The horizon is very, very special surface. Okay, so horizon is generated by null Killing vector k, that one over there. So really this partial t becomes very, very special on the horizon. What I mean by generated is that you can think about the horizon is basically to be a null cone, and this vector k goes on this null cone. Okay. Everywhere else, the k will look like, you know, something like this. It's just d over dt, right? So if you're far away from the black hole, they just go tick time, just go up. But as I go closer and closer to the horizon, it gets more and more tilted, and on the horizon exactly now. Okay, yes?
Sorry, I just realized I missed, what was S there?
Very good, thank you. It's a sphere at infinity, S2 at infinity, or you can calculate it anywhere. But yeah, it's like you calculate a flux over the sphere somewhere, so typically at infinity. Okay, so very good. And so then you can define what the surface gravity is. And what you can also show is that this vector k actually becomes a null geodesic on the horizon. If it's a null geodesic, it has to satisfy geodesic equation. Nabla mu, k nu. And so typically, you discuss geodesics in affine parametrization, which means that you're setting this equal to 0. So here, you are not setting it equal to 0, but you are setting it proportional to the vector itself. You can get it by non-affine parametrization. And the constant of proportionality here is precisely what you call surface gravity. Okay, so this is the surface gravity. Okay, so now you can try to calculate yourself. Please do it if you want to. Right, this is the definition of kappa. You just take dt, you calculate the left-hand side, you compare with the right-hand side, and you get kappa. Of course, the betrayal is that if you use these coordinates, which we are writing here, they are not well-defined on the horizon. They blow up on the horizon. So you will get something which doesn't make sense, typically. So instead, you have to be using the coordinates which are well-defined on the horizon. So you go to the in going coordinates or, you know, whatever, the coordinates which are regular on the horizon. And then this is easy peasy to calculate. Okay, so what is the result for any spacetime which looks like this? You will find that kappa is simply given by you take the function f, you take its derivative with respect to r, evaluate it at r plus, and divide by 2. So this is what you get for any spacetime which looks like this. Okay, so this is the check of your result. So very good. So it's easy to differentiate this. So there's no this q squared over r squared is not there. So what you will get is something like plus 2m over r squared. Let's see if we can do it. It's 2m over r squared. Now you evaluate it at r equal to r plus and divide by 2. So it's m over r squared. And so and now you can evaluate it in terms of r plus, or you can evaluate it in terms of whatever you want. So typically people write it's 1 over 4m, or m is r plus over 2, so it's 1 over 2r plus. Is it? Did I screw it up? Or is it okay? It's okay. Okay, very good. So that's the surface gravity. Okay. So this is a big mystery, right? So I'm telling you about killing vectors. I'm telling you about the horizons here. But in the end, we get this very nice formula, 1 over 4m. Okay, let's see what Newton would give us if he wanted to calculate the acceleration, right? Compare to Newton. And so Newton, kappa Newton, is simply given by your favorite high school formula. It's m over r squared. Okay. So m over r plus square. That's what it is, right? It's exactly this. So it actually, at this point, somehow miraculously, if you just take Newton's law and you want to calculate the acceleration from the Newton's law, it exactly agrees with what you get for the spacetime in full general relativity. Okay, of course, this is a coincidence. And in some sense, this is how the coordinates which you are using here were constructed, so that this works, basically. So really, you can somehow think about this surface gravity as the Newtonian acceleration on the black hole horizon. But you would be very, very wrong if you did that, okay? So why? So what is the Newton acceleration? Is how much I have to accelerate, let's say, in order to stay still somewhere, right? Okay, so that would be here. So if you did that for black hole, the acceleration on the horizon is actually infinite. So if you want to stay with your rocket on the black hole horizon, you have to accelerate infinitely, it has to be infinity, so that you stay on the horizon. Yes?
I have a question about the geodesic thing. I thought usually the constant of proportionality would depend on the parameterization.
Exactly. Precisely. Yeah, that's a very good question. This k here, which I wrote here, I wrote it as d over dt, right? But I could have written 2 times d over dt or 5 times d over dt. What is very, very important is that this Killing vector, which we are thinking about, is properly normalized at infinity. So I'm taking a Killing vector, which is properly normalized at infinity. It goes like plus minus 1, something like that, right? So really, the normalization does enter this formula. And you have to properly fix the normalization of the Killing vector so that this formula gives you the right answer. But of course, you're absolutely right, right? So left-hand side is quadratic in K. So I have K here, K here. The right-hand side is linear in K. So if I change K to something times K, well, kappa will change, right? So you have to properly normalize your Killing vector.
This may be related, but this equation would also give different answers if you choose like different non-affine parameter that's parameterizing the geodesic. Is that connected to the normalization of K?
Yeah, so exactly. So you have to normalized circular vector, and you have to have, you know, the given parametrization. All right. So,
what does it mean to generate a horizon?
It means that you can think about this horizon as a null surface, as a light cone. And so there is a vector which is tangent to that light cone. And it happens to be this vector k. So really, if you want to, you can follow, you can see what the horizon is by following the null rays of the vector k. So that's what really shows you where the hypersurface is, where the horizon is. All right, so if you want to stay on the horizon from the Newtonian perspective, your acceleration is infinite. So it doesn't look like 1 over 4m. This is definitely finite. So what you need to do is you need to redshift that to infinity. So typically what the surface gravity is, you know, there's a very nice toy model how you can think about the surface gravity, is that you say, well, I want to keep a test particle on the black hole horizon, right? If I am on the horizon holding it, my force has to be infinite. But now I attach to this test particle a string, massless string, you know, if you go fishing, that type of string, and you go to infinity. And if you are at infinity holding the string extends all the way to the space-time, holds the test particle on the horizon, then you are holding it precisely with this force 1 over 4m at infinity. Okay, so this thing here already takes into account the redshift which you get from the strong gravitational field as you go away from the horizon of the black hole. Yes?
I think it's related to the width question. I'm not understanding how you generate the, because the horizon is a 3D, like, it is a three-dimensional thing, isn't it? Isn't it?
It's a hypersurface, yes.
So it is generated by more than one vector field.
Sure. No. I'm saying that this thing here will be tangent to the horizon. We can talk about it later. Yeah. All right. So we have surface gravity. So that's a mysterious quantity. We can calculate the horizon area. It's good that you asked that question because this will confuse you even more. What we'll be calculating here is not the area of the 3D surface, but of a 2D bifurcation surface. So we'll be taking t equal to constant slice, and r plus equal to constant slice. Okay, so you are really taking at a given instant of time, and at given r equal to r plus. Now, if you look at the metric there, the metric ds square just now becomes r plus square. Let's call it d gamma square, which is r plus square d omega square, right? So dt term is gone. Or you can think about it like f is equal to 0. It's the same thing. And dr is 0. So the first term, two terms are gone. And then you have just r plus square d omega square. So now how do you calculate an area for a given metric? You just calculate the determinant of that metric. And you integrate it so the area is just an integral over the determinant of this metric gamma, square root of that, d theta, d phi. Okay, and the determinant is boring, right? So it's just r plus, it's constant on the horizon, and you just integrate d theta and d phi over the spherical part, which gives you 4 pi. Okay, so now we know everything about the black hole we wanted to know. So now an ingenious idea. We have one more blackboard. Now, ingenious idea is the following. We just differentiate A, okay, for no reason at this point. Okay, so 4 pi r plus square, it gives me 8 pi r plus dr plus, right? If I differentiate 4 pi r plus square, this gives me that. Now I differentiate m. M is r plus over 2, so it gives me dr plus. So it gives me 1 half dr plus. Okay, and I also know that kappa is 1 over 2r plus. So then you find an observation that dm equals to kappa over 2 pi dA over 4. Okay, well, that's our observation. Well, you can check it yourself, it works. But what does it mean, right? Well, at this point, it doesn't mean anything. The only thing which we know is that on the left-hand side, we have the energy of the space-time. So this is like dE, right? And then people thinking, okay, well, what important law in physics has dE on the left-hand side? And you think about it, and maybe you come up with something like thermodynamics, maybe dE equals to TdS, maybe. So is this really a thermodynamic first law? Maybe, maybe not. So before, actually, this happened, that people really understood that this is nothing than the law of thermodynamics, is that Bardeen, Carter, and Hawking, BCH, Bardeen, Carter, and Hawking in 1973, they formulated the laws of black hole mechanics. So why mechanics? Because you can think about this law as, you know, what happens to the black hole if I throw something in? If I throw some particle in, it will carry some energy into the black hole. So the mass of the black hole will change correspondingly. This is the dm. As a response, there will be change in area of the black hole, according to this formula over here. Okay, so that's why black hole mechanics, because people are thinking like, I am throwing some particles in, and what is the response of the black hole? Okay, and so by then it was known that stationary black holes are really boring. Namely, there are no Hare theorems saying that every black hole is fully characterized by just a number of charges. Okay, so stationary black holes are boring, namely described by just a couple of charges, so namely by m, which is the mass, j, which is the angular momentum, q, which is the electric charge, and you can also have magnetic charge if you believe in those, but let's say this is it. So no Hare theorems saying, well, every black hole with just these three same asymptotic charges will look the same, right? So there is no any characteristic feature which would distinguish one black hole from another. It's just as long as these three charges are the same, as long as the black hole is the same mass, same angular momentum, and same charge, the black hole has to look like the same. They are the same black hole, okay? So stationary black holes are boring. And for these black holes, what they found is that there are four laws of black hole mechanics. They call it zero law, first law, second law, and third law. Okay, the zero law is that kappa is equal to constant on the horizon. Okay, then they found something like this for the first law, but now, of course, there are some extra work terms. So we have now, more generally, that dm, the response of the black hole, if we throw some particle carrying some energy, some angular momentum, some charge, there will be a response of the black hole. The area will change. The total charge and total angular momentum will change of the black hole. Okay, and this is equal to kappa over 2 pi dA over 4 plus omega dj plus phi dq. Okay, so that's the first law. So now we already know these two. J is the angular momentum. Omega is the angular velocity of the black hole. So if you calculate d phi over dt, how much really the horizon rotates, so omega is d phi over dt, on the horizon. So this is what gives you this omega. Phi is the electrostatic potential. So this is the angular velocity of the hole, and phi is the electrostatic potential, which is basically like the potential difference between the horizon and infinity, right? Anyway, these two things are simply just the work terms. It's like an electric field work and the rotational work, which we include over here. Okay, so that's the first law for these more general black holes. And you can check it for Kerr or Kerr-Newman if you want explicitly. Second law is that the area of the horizon never decreases. Okay, and the last one is that kappa cannot go to zero by a finite number of steps. Okay, so now they publish these four laws, and if you look at them, they look precisely like the laws of thermodynamics, provided that you say that kappa over 2 pi is the temperature, dA over 4 is dS, the of entropy, then this is just the entropy law. The entropy never decreases. Temperature never goes to zero in finite number of steps.
What do you mean by finite number of steps?
Also, you cannot decrease the temperature of a system to zero by doing a finite number of steps, by a physical process, if you want. Right? So that's what you know from thermodynamics. So now people were trying to do. So for example, here, what really decreases the temperature, as we shall see later, is adding charge, for example. So if you start putting charge onto the black hole, you start decreasing the temperature. So now the question is, can I put so many charged particles into the black hole so that the temperature would vanish? Okay, and then people show that it's impossible. Okay. So anyway, so they have these laws of black hole mechanics, but they never accepted that these could be laws of thermodynamics at that paper, which is really, really strange. And it's puzzling to Hawking himself, I guess. Right? Yes?
I think you just answered the question.
I did? Okay, amazing. Thank you. That's good. Okay, so this was the law, state of R at that point. And so why they were so reluctant to say that these are the laws of thermodynamics is, of course, you know, classically, black hole does not have temperature, right? Classically, whatever you throw into the black hole, it's absorbed there, but nothing comes out of the black hole, classically, right? So classically, the temperature is zero. Classically, black hole temperature is zero. And so that's why they thought, well, it's a nice analogy with the laws of thermodynamics, but it cannot be, right? So black hole simply is an ultimate sponge. Black hole is an it absorbs everything, but it does not radiate away anything, so it cannot have temperature. But then this was very strange. And so then Bekenstein came up with a famous toy experiment, well, Gedanken experiment, that, you know, he was thinking like, okay, so what happens with our world? We have a cup of tea that has some entropy. We throw that cup of tea into the black hole, right? So because the black hole has no entropy, that entropy disappears from our universe. Is this possible, right? And so by analyzing this question, he came up with a proposal that it cannot be so, that really black hole has to carry entropy. And if it can carry entropy, it can have non-trivial temperature as well. So Bekenstein, cup of tea, which is thrown to the black hole, implied that actually this is not true, and that the entropy of the black hole should be proportional to the area of the black hole. Okay, so this is what he actually, so you can read that paper. It's not mathematically involved, it's just very nice philosophical paper. But at the end, the conclusion is that the entropy of the black hole should carry entropy, which is proportional to the area. Okay, what he couldn't get is exact proportionality constant. So he just concluded S is proportional to A, but he couldn't conclude that it's A over 4 or something like that.
This result is true for classical black holes as well.
If you take them semi-classically. So you know, once you start talking about thermodynamics, you are sort of beyond the classical regime, right? So you will have to be taking some quantum effects into account. So. And so now this was put on firm ground by Hawking in 1974. And so what he did, he considered quantum fields around the black hole, and he sent some field onto the black hole, and then he realized actually this field is amplified as it actually passes the black hole. And so there's some emission by the black hole. And so the black holes do radiate particles away, and they do radiate as black body at the temperature, which is kappa over 2 pi. Okay? So that's the Hawking radiation, and this was, you know, when it's a quantum radiation, okay? So really, if you take quantum effects into account, then black holes will radiate away particles, and they will radiate away like the black body at this temperature, kappa over 2 pi.
I'm a bit confused because this entire analysis seems to be fully classical, right? Like, how do we just
start
adding?
So all the way, so this is exactly right. So this is completely classical. This was completely classical. This is just playing with the Einstein equations and it's all geometry and stuff like that. No quantum whatsoever. Okay, here is where the quantum starts in. Okay, so really, you know, here you are thinking about quantum fields in curved space-time. And you do the calculation using the quantum field theory, and you see that the response of the black hole is this response. Okay, thank you for that question. Maybe I didn't say it clearly enough. So this is really a quantum effect. It's no longer classical.
Wittgenstein's argument involves quantum, which creates information.
It contains thermodynamics, so I would say it contains quantum, because otherwise, classically, All right, so we have T over, kappa over 2 pi. And from here, of course, if this is to be really the first law of thermodynamics, so this is the temperature. So now this must be the entropy. So from here, he concluded that the entropy is A over 4. It's the area of the horizon divided by 4. Okay. So this was amazing discovery. So now, this is amazing. It's true, but the original Hawking's derivation people don't like, and the reason why people don't like it is because it uses this quantum field theory in curved space, which is on the fixed background geometry. Okay. So now imagine that you send some quantum field. So this quantum field, as it goes closer and closer to the black hole, it becomes more and more blue shifted. Right? You are going down the gravitational potential, you gain energy. As it slices the horizon, its energy is actually infinite. Right? If you have something which has infinite energy, it will certainly have some non-trivial back reaction onto your geometry. We know that energy source is the geometry. So if you have huge energy, there will be a huge back reaction on the geometry. You will destroy the Schwarzschild black hole. Okay, so that's why people did not believe in Hawking's derivation, because he completely neglected the back reaction. Okay. Nevertheless, there are some other ways how you can calculate the same temperature. One of them is the Euclidean trick. So alternative to Hawking's derivation is the Euclidean trick. Okay, so what is the Euclidean trick? So you probably learned already in your QFT course is that if you have thermal Green function, thermal Green function, then if you actually consider the Euclidean time, so you do the Vick rotation on your normal time coordinate, so you do Euclidean time tau equals to I times t, so you do the Vick rotation. So this is the normal Lorentzian time. You go to the Euclidean time tau, then your thermal Green function will be periodic. In this Euclidean time, and this period beta is given by 1 over temperature. Okay, so this is what you probably know from your QFT course. Has this been discussed? Yeah, okay, very good. So, very good. So in some sense, you can take this as a definition of thermality. So if you calculate your Green function, you extend it to the Euclidean time, you find that this has a property that's periodic in this Euclidean time, you can actually identify the period beta that gives you the temperature. So you can take this as a definition of thermal state.
I remember this was discussed, but it was discussed at the very end of class, and I never fully understood why the period should be related to the temperature.
We can discuss maybe this later, okay. Or we can force that person who taught it to to tell you. But it's basically by comparing to how your partition function looks like to how your pass integral in Lorentzian setting looks like, it comes from there. So we can take this as a definition. Of thermality. Okay. And so then what you can do is that you can study Green functions in the background of Schwarzschild spacetime. So let's say you take a scalar field, you calculate its Green function, you do this Euclidean trick here, and what you will find is that precisely that Green function will have this periodicity. And so around Schwarzschild, there will be a thermal state. Okay, so Green's functions or fields functions of fields around Schwarzschild have this property. Okay. But the question is, can we actually read this directly from the geometry? So the question is, what about geometry itself? Okay. And the question is, can we read from the geometry itself that really Schwarzschild should correspond to some term state?
I'm a bit confused why this weak position method avoids the problems of Hawking's derivations, because it seems like we still need to set up the scalar field in a curved background and do the path integral.
Sure. Okay. Let's discuss afterwards. My personal perspective is that there is 101 derivations of this result. None of them is completely satisfactory. Okay. Okay. But anyway, so because they seem completely different, they use different principles. They are independent in some sense. Then, and because they lead to the same result, people believe in that result. Okay. So let's try to do this. Let's try to apply this to the geometry itself. So that's our geometry. Let's just do T to I tau, right? So then we have the Euclidean Schwarzschild. ds square Euclidean is now plus f d tau square plus dr square over f plus r square d omega square. Okay. So now it's our Euclidean Schwarzschild. Let's now zoom on the horizon. Goes to R plus. And so for that, we Taylor expand your function f. So it's f at R plus R minus R plus times f prime at R plus dot dot dot. F of R plus is what?
Zero
by definition. This thing here is related to the kappa, as we calculated before. So f prime is 2 kappa. So this is equal to 2 kappa delta r, while this guy is delta r, plus dot, dot, dot. So our Euclidean geometry is just 2 kappa delta r d tau square plus dr square 2 kappa delta r plus r plus square d omega square. Okay? So that's what our Euclidean geometry is. So now we can change coordinates. And we can say, well, let's change coordinates. So everything here. So kappa is just constant, right? So and here, this is linear in R. So this is just function of R. So we have dr function of R. We can change coordinates to rho. Why not? Let's call this d rho square. Okay. So which means d rho is dr divided by square root of 2 kappa delta r. This is linear in R. It's simple to integrate. Okay, you can integrate this, and you can find how rho depends on R. So from here, you find that delta r is kappa over 2 rho square. Okay, simple to integrate. can do it yourself. Okay, so what it means that our Euclidean metric is just given by this is kappa over 2 rho square, so the 2 cancel, and this is just kappa square rho square d tau square plus d rho square plus r plus square d omega square, right? Okay, so now if I introduce new coordinate phi by kappa times tau, then this becomes ds square equals to rho square d phi square plus d rho square. By the way, this phi has nothing to do with that phi here, so that's why I write omega here. Okay, this is just to look such as this. And now look at this two-dimensional geometry here. What does it look like?
Cone.
Huh?
Cone.
Like a cone, or very good. Yeah, it will be a cone. Thank you. But it simply looks like a flat space written in cylindrical coordinates, or polar coordinates, right? So it looks like dx squared plus dy squared if I set x equal to rho times sine phi and y equal to rho times cosine phi. So this looks like flat space in polar coordinates. And it will be a flat space in polar coordinates, provided it's not a cone, as you mentioned, right? So if I introduce this thing here, as long as phi has period 2 pi, it's a flat sheet. If it does not, and phi has, let's say, smaller period, so around this point, let's say this will be pi instead of 2 pi, right? If phi goes pi, not 2 pi, then there will be a tip of the cone, and there will be a cone geometry. There will be something strange here in the origin. It's like flat space in polar coordinates, and it is provided phi is periodic with period 2 pi. If it has different period than 2 pi, then there will be this tip of the cone, right? If it's smaller than 2 pi, it will be a cone. If it's bigger than that, it will be some kind of hyperbolic nonsense, right? So as long as this is true, and we just have nice flat space with no conical singularities, with no tips of the cone and stuff like that. Okay. So now the logic is, well, we cannot have this tip of the cone. We have to really have a flat space. Right. At rho equal to 0. Why? What happens at rho equal to 0? Well, by definition, rho equal to 0 corresponds to delta r equal to 0, so r equal to r plus. We are on the horizon. So rho equal to 0 is where the horizon is located, right? The original horizon was non-singular for the black hole. So now when we just went to the Euclidean setting, how can it become singular now? It still has to be non-singular, right? There is no any energy momentum source which would source some non-singularity or something like that. It has to be perfectly regular. So this has to happen. We have to have flat space. There cannot be any singularity now. Okay, so so horizon is non-singular. Horizon was originally non-singular, so it has to remain non-singular. Singular. And if it has to remain non-singular, then we have to have flat space. We cannot have a cone, tip of the cone. We cannot have anything else. So that means phi has to have period 2 pi. But look, phi is just kappa times tau. Okay? So kappa times tau has to have period 2 pi. So tau has to have period 2 pi over kappa. This is your beta. This is the periodicity of the Euclidean time. So the black hole has temperature kappa over 2 pi. Isn't that easy peasy nice result? Which again, nobody believes in.
This is a requirement about the coordinate singularity, and there's no problem with the singularity.
No, but here. At rho equals 0, there is no, you know, you cannot extend this geometry over rho equals 0, right? This is really, it's possible to show that this will be a complete manifold, okay? So really, if you include the point rho equals 0, you will have complete manifold there, right? And so it's not a coordinate singularity there. It would be a real physical. So this thing here, if you really had a cone, this thing here, that would be a real singularity here, right? Because if I go around this point, my circumference of the circle is no 2 pi, but it's pi or something like that. So this would be a real singularity. So non-singular spacetime means like I have Euclidean geometry, you know, or Lorentzian geometry at every point. So, you know, the circles have to be really circles and they have to have the proper circumference and stuff like that. Once you break that, you have a singularity, right? Here, you know, this thing here would be a true singularity there. It's not just a coordinate singularity.
This apparent coordinate singularity, then it will really be a physical singularity.
Mm-hmm. That's right, exactly.
When we do the Euclidean time of the metric, it doesn't make sense that there is still a horizon, because a horizon is by definition connected to the light cone.
very good. Of course, there is no horizon here, so the geometry looks very, very different. But it's just an analytical continuation of the geometry, right? And the statement is, if you had non-singular geometry at the beginning to start with, you better keep that non-singularity even in the Euclidean setting. That's something you people believe in. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But it's something you know, that is assumed in this derivation. OK? I have 2 minutes. So we have the beautiful formula for the temperature. And let me restore the unit. So T is kappa over 2 pi. And if you restore the units, there will be also h bar c cubed, noting that it's a quantum effect. And there will be a Boltzmann constant here. Okay. So that's the temperature of the black hole, which we calculated here and upon restoring the units. And so you may be asking, like, is this significant for astrophysical black holes? So for astro black holes, you can calculate how much this temperature is. And what you will find is that it's something like 6 times 10 to minus 6 Kelvin for the black holes, which are of the size of Sun. And that's not very much, OK? So if you take the CMB temperature, it's much, much bigger than this. So this is much, much smaller than T of CMB. And so there's no way you could measure this temperature for astrophysical black holes, okay? Because the CMB will always spoil the result and stuff like that, right? On the other hand, if you had black holes of the size of the moon, then T would be something like CMB. And if you have black holes which are smaller than that, for example, those which we could have created in Large Hadron Collider, okay, their temperature would be huge. So remember, this kappa goes like 1 over m. So this goes like 1 over m. The bigger the black hole, the smaller temperature. The smaller the black hole, bigger temperature. So if you created teeny tiny black holes in the Large Hadron Collider, they would have a huge temperature. So small black holes can have huge temperature. And so if you did create these small black holes, what would happen is that they would basically immediately burst into the Hawking radiation, and that was the signal people were looking for, right? So these black holes, for example, those created in LHC, could have been observed by burst of Hawking radiation. What is also obvious from here is that if you have a black hole radiating as black body, then the energy, that's my last formula, dm over dt goes like sigma t to the 4 area. So t goes like 1 over m. A goes like m square. So this goes like 1 over m square. And then you find that in the time, the evaporation, which is m over m sun cube times 10 to 71 seconds, the black hole would completely evaporate. Okay, black hole evaporates. As we shall see, this poses a huge theoretical problem, which is the information paradox. It's like, what happens as the black hole evaporates? What happens with all the stuff which was consumed by black hole turned into the Hawking radiation, and all the information about the original stuff sort of disappeared in just knowing what the temperature of the black hole is. So that's what the black hole information paradox is, and that's what we will discuss next time. So let me stop here. Questions? Yes?
In the example we started with, the function f is very easy, but we studied other cases. What happens if the derivative in the horizon vanishes and you would need to do like a next order expansion? Do everything go still like the area, or do you get different laws?
So thank you for that question. So indeed, that can happen, that f prime is equal to zero. That happens, like, so typically your function f, so if this is zero, so the function f looks like this, right? So I have, so this is r, this is f, so it goes to, I don't know, 1 at infinity, and then it goes like that, and that's where the horizon is located. But what can happen is that you can have another horizon, so this will be r plus, this will be r minus, as you were asking. And now if you start putting more and more charge, for example, this r plus and r minus start going together, so you can have a picture like this, where it exactly touches here. Of course, at this point, you have the minimum. So f and f prime are equal to zero. So this black hole is something which is called extremal black hole. It has zero temperature, but the entropy is still non-trivial. So typically, it depends on what kind of black holes you have. But you can have extremal black holes. They have vanishing temperature. They are considered to have to be like the ground states of your with zero temperature.
Question about what you said with the periodicity of phi. You said if the period was more than 2 pi, then it would be some kind of like hyperbolic.
You can try to,
What would the geometry, I don't see why it would have singularity or why it would have something.
Oh, it's just, think about it like that you would have like surplus of like angle, right? So here, if I twist it like that, I have like a small angle here going around. It's just pi instead of 2 pi. So now try to picture things that you open it up so that if you go around, it actually has 3 pi instead of 2 pi, right? I cannot do it here, right? Well, I can maybe do it like that. No, it's not. Okay, but yeah.
Are there derivations of this formula where they consider back reaction of gravity?
Typically, the back reaction will bring you some corrections to the entropy and stuff like that. So people typically believe there will be some logarithmic subleading terms correcting your entropy, for example, and stuff like that, which come from the back reaction and so on. So you can go beyond. It's not standard. Like, people try various things, but. So this is not taking into account back reaction.
But is it still proportional to the area?
So the leading order is proportional to the area. It's still area over 4, but then you get subleading logarithmic corrections, typically.
That is not the area.
Huh?
That is not the area, correct.
And that's not the area anymore. Although I can give you a nice classical black hole which has these logarithmic corrections if you want. If you are interested, I can show you what a classical black hole. But these logarithmic things, which are classical now, comes from the fact that this black hole has some kind of weird scalar field which behaves logarithmically and stuff like that. And you can correct the entropy by these logarithmic terms.
I don't kind of get why we can consider the surface gravity to be constant.
You can show that. Okay, so this is not something that you assume. So here, of course, in this definition, it's just a function, right? So if you just write geodesic equation, you can have arbitrary function of tau or whatever, which is standing on the right hand side. But what they really shown is that kappa has to be constant.
And because it's stationary.
Because the black hole is stationary.
If you throw something in, then mass area and area should change, and kappa, it depends on mass and the area.
It depends on the mass and the air. Well, okay, so certainly if you had the dynamical black hole, you know, its temperature would be changing, right? Sort of. If you can still think, talk about something like temperature, which is, let's say, slowly time varying or whatever. So, of course, this is changing. So as the black hole evaporates, you know, it's getting smaller and smaller, the black hole temperature is changing, right? But this is a relatively small, slow process. For astrophysical black holes, you know, the evaporation rate is so slow that you can take t equal to constant, right? But at the final stages, t will be huge, and the black hole will be drastically changing, and then you cannot.
Yeah, my question was more about the Hawking result, like the Wittgenstein result, actually. Mm-hmm. Because in the derivation, you do assume that k is constant while you throw the cup of tea, and it doesn't change. But why shouldn't that change in that process?
Why it should change the...
Why should we not consider that the surface gravity changes when we throw...
Oh, because you have teeny tiny cup of tea, and you have huge black hole, right?
And then the A and the M are also teeny tiny.
Yeah. No, but certainly, you know, when you integrate things, like when you integrate these things here, you take into account that the temperature is changing, right? So here, you really are changing the temperature. But you know, everything here started sort of stationary and, you know, not time varying, and, you know, or, you know, when the black hole thermodynamics sort of, well, when the thermodynamics is working, right? So you can also have non-equilibrium thermodynamics where you have to consider, you know, time scales and other things happening, and it's much more complicated, right? So here this is the standard equilibrium thermodynamics where everything has time to thermalize, and then all the changes are super, super slow and stuff like that. Okay.
You said that the green functions of the fields are structural electrons. Is it true for all fields?
As far as I know, yes. Yeah.
Sorry, on top of that, has it been computed explicitly and shown to be periodic, or is it an assumption?
Has
the green function been computed explicitly and shown to be periodic, or is it?
Yeah.
This side of the blackboard, which things are like observer dependent? Everything, you need an asymptotic observer at infinity that is well defined.
This is a very good question and very tricky question. So, for example, take this omega, okay? So, people say, if you read any textbook, people say omega is the angular velocity of the horizon. I just calculate d phi over dt, evaluated on the horizon, that's my omega, right? Now we can easily show that there is nothing like, in Einstein's theory, angular velocity of something. It's always angular velocity of something with respect to something else, right? So you can only compare two angular velocities of two different things, but you cannot say this is an absolute angular velocity of this thing and that's an absolute angular velocity of that thing. If you integrate the Einstein equations, what you find really is that the omega is sort of the difference between angular velocity at infinity and angular velocity on the horizon. So that's the right meaning here, right? You always compare two things. Similarly here, phi is the electrostatic potential of the horizon with respect to infinity. Similarly here, the t contains information about the k. K is the Killing vector, which was properly normalized at infinity. So again, it's some kind of temperature which is measured with, you know, between the horizon and infinity, sort of, right? So it's always like a relative quantities which enter here.
Okay,
I don't know if that answers our question.
And infinity should be just a point. Like, what happens if you have like a non-trivial geometry in which you can have like a dynamical thing at infinity? When you say normalize at infinity, like, because in this case we have like a time translation invariance, but is it possible that we have different things at different infinities, or that doesn't make sense?
Well, I don't know what you mean by different infinity. So what we will be mostly interested in here will be infinity of ADS. So that will be nice time-like infinity, which I will describe in future lectures. And it really depends, you know, what kind of infinity you have and how you can measure with respect to this infinity things, right? And so, for example, this formula for the Komar mass or whatever, that only works in asymptotically flat space. It will not work in ADS space. It will not work for anything else. So it really depends on what kind of infinity you have and how you approach it. And yeah, definitely. Oh, we can make 1.5 hour lectures, so it's amazing. You have so many questions.
I have a question about your interpretation of the temperature, because you said that Hawking derived it by adding quantum fields around the horizon. So is it somehow telling us about the interaction with quantum fields inside the black hole and what's fluctuating around the horizon? Like, does it tell us anything?
So basically, there is a very intuitive picture which people like very much, and I don't know how much. And again, that provides you. So this is your horizon, right? So that's that part of the null cone. And typically, you know, what the intuitive picture of the Hawking variation is that you quantum mechanically pair create two particles, which, you know, sort of one can, you know, be above, slightly above the horizon, and one can be below the horizon. So now this one has to go to the singularity or whatever, stays behind the horizon. And this one sort of goes to infinity because it's above the horizon, so it can escape. And this is the Hawking radiation. Okay, so this is one very nice intuitive picture how you can understand this Hawking radiation, the origin of the Hawking radiation.
I guess my question is, does the temperature then tell us about the flux that's happening? Is it?
Exactly. No, you will see a flux of particles coming from the black hole. Yes, exactly. And they will look like black body radiation, so they will have the right frequencies looking like black body and stuff like that. And then they sort of like coming from the horizon to the observer at infinity.
Is it possible that like normal black body radiation not related to black holes is like more complicated than we think and has like weird quantum field theoretic effects?
Well, I would say that normal black body radiation is well understood, but of course the question is, does it describe what happens when you burn coal and stuff like that, right? And that can be more complicated than just the black body radiation. But, you know, black body radiation is an idealization of things that you have, like, all the time you need to thermalize everything perfectly and stuff like that. And then you have this distribution of energies and stuff like that. But in real world, when you are burning something, it does not burn as perfect black body, right? So if the black, but you know, here, for the black hole, the theoretical prediction is, yes, it will be perfect black body. It's not entirely true, because there's also some gravitational barrier. So if you start, you know, shining the particles from the black hole, some of the particles get scattered on this barrier, and they scatter back to the black hole. So if you are at infinity, you don't really see a perfect black body, but instead you see some modification of that a little bit. Okay, let me stop here. It's not any time for another lecture, okay? We can discuss afterwards, okay?